Today, I'm rocking the suburbs.
He said to me, no regrets, savor every moment. Right. Hello, everybody. This is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to Rock in the Suburbs. And it is another kind of a somber topic that we have today. And joining me on the podcast today is a voice you might be familiar with from previous podcasts, and that is Paul Hayden. Paul, thank you for joining, and it's a shame we have to get together and have one of these conversations again, but I appreciate you lending your insights.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity.
Steve Cropper, the legendary guitar player from Sax Studio, Booker T and the MGs, and many other exploits in an amazing musical career, passed a couple days ago at the age of 84, I believe. Paul, we were just saying before we turned the microphones on that Steve Cropper is such an interesting character because he's a world-famous guitarist who wasn't like a guitarist in the spotlight. You know, he was the ultimate kind of backing guitarist, right? And is that kind of how your memory frames him and your appreciation of him is?
Yeah, I mean, I first became aware of him in probably... Well, the first Blues Brothers album came out, and that was really big mm-hmm. in Chicago. And Soul Man was played pretty regular. And there's a line, I believe, where John Belushi says, "Come on, Steve," something like
yeah.
that. And then the movie comes out, and you see Steve in the band. And then, you know, I didn't appreciate him at the time because I was more into Jimmy Page and Hendrix and Ace Frehley. But as I got older and I met a guy who's a really big Stax fan, kind of led me down the path and showed me how he played, not flashy, but just right.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. And it's interesting to me as well that many of the songs that he is known for as a composer, he was a co-composer on many of these songs. So, you know, I think what you're saying is exactly right in that he knew how to put another part to a song or what to add to it in a tasteful way, but also, you know, with that deep background he had of R&B and soul music that he grew up listening to. One of his heroes was a guitar player from a band called the Five Royales, called Loman Pauling. And, you know, very much like Steve, he was a foundational guitar player. He wasn't a soloist, you know, to any degree. And he wasn't somebody who would do, you know, 30 overdubs in the studio. He always did it very sympathetically and very importantly to kind of carry the song along.
Yep. In fact, one of my contributions was going to be a record Steve Cropper put out in 2011 called Dedicated, a Salute to the Five Royales. And that really kind of sealed it for me. Like, okay, this guy's a major guitar player.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on there. Definitely check it out if you have not heard it. He basically takes their songbook and lets different people sing on it. On a few, he just does instrumentals, but it was really eye-opening to me.
Very cool. Very cool. I haven't spent much time with that record, but I definitely will be doing so for sure. Let's go a little bit over Steve's history. Steve Cropper was born, I believe, in Missouri, but he moved to Memphis at a fairly young age. And at the time, in the 1950s that he was coming through school, It was a very segregated place. And he was in with a group of white kids in his school, and they got together and started making music. They were all big R&B fans. They named their band the Royal Spades. You know, I don't know if that was exactly the best choice, and they ended up changing in the name, of course. And also in that group was a guy called Packy Axton, who was a saxophonist and whose mother happened to be Estelle Axton, who was working on a little record label called Satellite Records with Jim Stewart. And Cropper and the band put together a song called Last Night that ended up getting recorded by the famous producer Chips Moman. And, you know, I'm sure many of our listeners know that song. It's a swinging instrumental, basically with a few words in it. And it's funny that for whatever reason, Chips Moman didn't want any guitar on this recording. So this famous guitarist, Cropper, ended up just playing a single organ note on that song. And the band went on, was going to go on tour behind this big hit. And that's not something Steve Cropper wanted to do. Packy Axton at that time was already living kind of an out of control lifestyle. And Steve Cropper decided he would stay in Memphis and work with Jim Stewart in the Stax studio. And that really became a turning point for his musical career. He learned the craft of recording. He eventually formed a band that became the Stax House Band, Booker T and the MGs, originally formed with Booker T. Jones, the organ player, bassist called Louis Steinberg, who was replaced not too long after the band formed by Donald Duck Dunn, and drummer Al Jackson Jr., along with Cropper on guitar. And from there, Paul, that was, you know, an incredible environment to create music from the early 60s, you know, through the late 60s. It was just one of the most amazing musical environments. And all the songs that were recorded there, you know, are just legendary and mind-blowing songs, and Cropper played on, you know, nearly all of them, and helped produce a lot of them too. So it's kind of amazing.
It is in the midnight hour, Dr. Yeah. Bay, that alone puts him at legendary status, but he did so much more, played with so many great people. You know, just the list goes on, you know, Rufus Thomas, Carla Thomas, Otis, Sam and Dave. I mean, just incredible what he must have witnessed that during that time frame.
Totally amazing. I mean, and, you know, of course, all the songs that Booker T and the MGs put out, along with Green Onions, Time is Tight is another one, Soul Limbo. I mean, you can name any of them. I remember getting the very early Booker T and the MGs Greatest Hits compilation and just thinking to myself, goodness gracious, like, this is unbelievable instrumental music. Like, I can't believe, you know, how soulful and how locked in it is. remains so fresh too, to this day. That's the thing. Most of the Stax music doesn't really sound dated. It doesn't sound like it came out as long ago as it did, right?
Right, and that's the thing about instrumentals. I think at the time were kind of seen as maybe a novelty, or like surf music had its run, and then it just kind of faded out. But when you hear those songs that you mentioned, and they're just great songs that obviously have stood the test of time, and they have this groove that nobody else could replicate. It was just this locked in, just pretty incredible run they had.
With many things, there were some political, tensions that occurred as Stax started to get a little more popular toward the end of the 1960s. But as you said, the songs that they created in that period where they were just functioning at their highest level is amazing. A couple I'll note is Baby, B-A-B-Y by Carla Thomas, where the piano and the guitar are just doing this back and forth thing. That's really a great song. A song by Otis Redding called Mr. Pitiful. It's one of my favorite Steve Cropper riffs that you can have.
Call me Mr. Pitiful. Baby, that's my name now.
Somewhere out there, I don't know, Paul, if you have any Stax compilations or boxes or anything like that, but there's a couple out there, that are like every Stax song from, 1960 to 1970 or something like that. And those things are just amazing. And, in addition to the songs you mentioned, that kind of body of work alone would put Cropper, way up at the top of the mountain for guitar players.
Yeah, those are loaded. I mean, start to finish. I mean, as a label, I don't know if there's a better one in terms of consistency for that time period. I mean, Motown was great, but Stax they just nailed it every time. I don't know.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, Cropper's fingerprints all over those songs. Eddie Floyd's Knock on Wood, that's another one. That's like an incredible tune. Just that, we've grown up with over the years and just kind of known after all this time. And you go back in music history and just another little page will unfurl itself about Stax or some little song that you hadn't heard before comes out. And it's just incredible. Two things I wanted to note that didn't involve the studio. In the year 1967, Booker T and the MGs were the backup band for Otis Redding's performance at the Monterey Pop Festival. And that was a breakout moment for Otis. It was the first time he was playing his music to a predominantly white audience that was a different market than the R&B market, that he came up in and was widely known and widely considered a star. And by all accounts, you know, he blew the crowd away during that 5 or 6 song little set that he played at Monterey Pop. And there was no shortage of excellent artists at Monterey Pop in 1967, that's for sure. And the other one from the same year, I think later in the year, when Stax took a package tour to Europe with Otis and Sam and Dave and some other acts, and Booker T and the MGs were the background group for that. And just reading about that a little bit and learning about it, Paul, it was amazing to me that when Cropper himself and others, they got over there, they couldn't believe how they were treated with this great, you know, welcome and respect. Let these music superstars. I mean, I think he said at one point, "I was just in the studio all the time. I had no idea, you know, how far reaching these records were. You know, I didn't even know that people in the UK were like listening to them." And it really kind of surprised him. And also, you know, some of the most legendary performances, live performances between Sam and Dave and Otis trying to cut each other every single night, you know, and the Booker T and the MGs behind him working really hard. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I think there's a couple names come to mind. I'm pretty sure Peter Gabriel saw one of those performances and was
amazing.
Very impacted. And I'm 99% sure Bill Graham said Otis was the best live performer he'd ever seen.
Oh,
and he'd seen a few.
He definitely had seen a few. Yeah, that's incredible. That is incredible. And you mentioned something that I didn't know about until I was doing some reading, but tell our listeners about Cropper's connection to Big Star.
Yeah, looking over the tributes that popped up yesterday, someone had mentioned he played on the version of Femme Fatale on Third. And I thought, well, I mean, I guess it makes sense. It was recorded in Memphis.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I had no recollection of it. So I played it, and there, sure enough, there he is, perfectly placed. But at the same time, when I think of that song, it's always Alex Chilton's vocals and then those kind of eerie background vocals from Leza. And yeah, it just proves that he seasoned it just enough that now when I hear it, I'm going to hear all that. And it's just a great, typically understated performance from Steve Cropper.
Said, I did the same thing. I listened to it, and I've heard that song, I know, many times in my life before, but never realized he was there. And then when you are told or you learn and you listen, just like you said, it's right there, just kind of in lockstep. even on that kind of sprawling and, you know, as you said, eerie album, it fits in just perfectly. Really, really amazing. So that's a very interesting little piece of history that I did not know. Another reason to love Steve Cropper. Cropper left Stax at the end of the 60s. There was a lot going on with Stax. They were in some financial difficulties. Al Bell had come in and stretched the company probably a little farther than it should have been stretched. And he went out to the West Coast and spent a long time working out there with different artists. And when he did put out a solo album in, I think it was 69 or early 70, it was called With a Little Help from My Friends. So another example of him not, you know, putting the spotlight on himself, which is very interesting. And talk a little bit about the Blues Brothers movies, Paul. You mentioned there at the top, but you growing up in the area where they were set, that must have been doubly popular.
Oh yeah, it was. Everybody saw it multiple times. I mean, the soundtrack was huge. You say what you want about the Blues Brothers, but they did expose a lot of the old artists to a new audience,
yes,
and myself included. And you know, that kind of planted the seed. I'm still a little young to appreciate that kind of music. It wasn't probably until the 90s when the big reissue boom hit, and you know, Rhino and all these other labels start putting out all these compilations of the older artists. And that, along with the friend I mentioned earlier, kind of brought that to me, and gave it, was able to appreciate it, the artistry of it, even though it wasn't flashy and over your head like a lot of the music I liked. And it also helped me, I think, down the line with a band like, say, Spoon, who I think does the same thing with the space. Like, they don't still every note, you know, they let the music breathe, and I think they do it to great effect. I may be grasping there, but in my brain, that's kind of how I took, you know, Steve Cropper's approach to music and kind of strung it out to this, to more of the current music. But for sure, I mean, Steve Cropper, Donald Duck Dunn, they were names everybody knew. You may not have known their history, but they became part of the, you know, the current language. And, you know, the movie itself was, I mean, still holds up. I mean, Aretha Franklin doing Think, Cab Calloway, Minnie the Moocher. I mean, that was a great movie. And, you know, I think it's held its own and kind of established Steve Cropper as a major, major player for my peers at the time.
It's such a great point. It really is. And that ability to expose that music, like you said, to a completely different generation, is just, it's hard to gauge the impact of that. It's really amazing. And I know there were some people who gave, you know, Steve Cropper and all the, you know, the musicians a little bit of flack for that being, you know, like whatever, a Hollywood version of soul music or whatever, but I completely disagree with that. I think it's such an important movie, and all the stuff that happened, you know, Ray Charles, Aretha in there, like you said, and it's incredible. Still must hold some sort of record for the most crashed cars, like in any movie of all time. It's got to be up there. Paul, thank you so much. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about, you mentioned it near the top, the album Dedicated, from 2011, a tribute to the Five Royales. Are there any tracks on there that that stand out for you that we could play?
You know, I think the one that I really, really like is called Think. And at first, when I saw the track listing, I'm like, oh, it's that Aretha Franklin song. But it's not. It's actually an instrumental that James Brown also sang with the lyrics. And I'm like, wow, this is really, and when I played it, I'm like, wait, I know this song, but I couldn't place it right away. And then eventually figured it out. And so that one, I mean, I'll say this, the people he has on there, I like them, like in small doses, like, you know, Betty Levitt, Sharon Jones, they're great and they kind of do their thing and leave. But I think that one, that kind of makes sense as an instrumental with just Steve's guitar is the one that I tend to go to when I pull it off the shelf.
Great stuff there. I'd like to close out our little tribute to Steve Cropper here with a post that Harris King, listener Harris King, shared with me from a musician named Michelle Jones. And I will read it to you. This is somebody that Harris went to high school with, and she's a professional violinist. So I'd like to read her post that she posted on social media. It says, quote, "My heart is heavy. Steve Cropper has passed to the next dimension. I only met him in person one time, but had the privilege of being on an album with him. He was a legend, a member of the exclusive Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the blues guitarist called on multiple sessions. Songwriter of favorites, including Sitting on the Dock of the Bay and many others. A star, real musician, including in the Blues Brothers movies. More importantly, he was a good man, a great father, and a friend to all musicians. He gave me some wonderful advice when I had the chance to speak with him last year, and I still follow it today. He said to me, no regrets, savor every moment. We chatted about blues chords and some music theory. He was quite the teacher. And Michelle concludes, when you get the chance to talk to your heroes, take it. Read the room first, and if it seems okay to approach, do it with humility and kindness. The world lost a true legend today. Rest in peace, Steve Cropper." We want to add to that, rest in power, Steve Cropper, from all of us here at Rock in the Suburbs. Paul, I want to thank you very much for taking a moment out of your day to discuss Steve here, for you to be able to contribute. So thank you very much. Any last thoughts, Paul?
Everybody listen to some Booker T and the MGs and appreciate the great contribution to music that he made. And rest in power, Steve Cropper.
Well said. Well said. With that, folks, we will play out with a little music from the late, great guitarist next week. We'll talk to you next week. Paul, thank you very much. And on behalf of Paul, Jim Linehan, and myself, we will talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, it just proves that he seasoned it just enough to now when I hear it, I'm going to hear all that. And it's just a great, typically understated performance from Steve Cropper.